your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
David Breton from the Stardome, how are you?
Observatory and Planetarium.
Thank you so much for the addition. Yep, that's the complete name. I'm hot. Feeling hot.
Apologies, I didn't have any reverb for my voice there.
It's a bit hot today, I'm afraid. I don't have the air-conditioned comfort that you're enjoying.
Where are you calling us from? Where are we calling you from?
So I don't have aircon, I'm afraid.
That's all right. It's totally normal. I don't have aircon either.
Yeah.
Now, David, there is kind of a bit of discussion happening around all these satellites which are getting put up into space, and people are starting to get concerned about us not being able to see the stars anymore.
In effect, on Saturday, a number of night stargazers saw this line of lights going across the sky.
The space train.
So people didn't know what it was. And some of them thought it might have been a big piece of space junk that was breaking up.
Some people are just...
Well, you know, that's sort of how it looks.
Well, if they tuned into this segment, they would have known that we covered the space train a couple of weeks ago. So.
Exactly. They should listen to the program. You're right. Yeah. But the main difference is that the lights they saw are pretty much the same brightness, and they're staying the same sort of distance apart, and they're not really changing.
Mm.
And the other thing is, eventually they just blink out. They just suddenly disappear. And that is an indication that it's a satellite.
Right.
Okay, to see satellites, you have to have a dark background. It's got to be nighttime. They don't shine by their own bright light, only from light reflected from the sun. So it's got to be after the sun has gone down, when the sky is dark, so you've got that contrast. But the sun is just beyond the horizon, so the sunlight is still shining up at an angle to the altitude where satellites are orbiting. And so for a few hours after sunset and a few hours before sunrise, that's when you see any of the satellites.
So it's not a tear in the massive sheet that's covering a planet?
So was that?
Nothing. Carry on.
Oh, it wasn't quite with you there.
Yeah, that's right. It was just a massive flat Earth comment. No big deal.
So with these particular ones, these were launched by SpaceX about a week ago, 60 of them all at once. And so they're following along behind. They're released into a lower orbit, and they can be seen pretty well, and they're all behind each other. But each of them has a little thruster, and so each of them is, over time, making its way to its own orbit at a higher altitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so with time, they will disperse, and you don't see this long train of lights going across the sky. There's a lot of them, though. That's the main problem. SpaceX want to put up thousands.
What kind of bums me out about satellites is the fact that there's probably been quite a lot of wishes made on them.
Instead of a star.
Yeah, and I wonder what happens to those wishes.
Well, you're right. I also wonder about those who wish upon a star. That's a supernova that blows up and disappears.
Ooh, that is a...
Be a bit of a downer.
Now, David, how long are these satellites going to stay up in orbit? Are they up for a couple of years and then they burn up in the
No. They're there for the long term. What SpaceX are building is a constellation of satellites going around the Earth that will provide broadband internet connection.
Mm.
So it's there for a commercial reason. And the completion time for the ones that are going up at the moment is March 2027, so that's when it'll be fully commercially operational. But by then, they'll have about 10,000 satellites up.
And they're pretty comfortable with the durability and the longevity of these things?
They are, otherwise they wouldn't be doing it. On the other hand, they are addressing some concerns by other satellite owners.
Mm.
By NASA and so on, because if something goes wrong with one of these satellites, what's the danger of it hitting something and breaking up and creating space debris. They are able to look after themselves to a certain degree. Of the 240 that have already been sent up, two of them are actively being deorbited at the moment. Mm. So those two satellites, out of the 240, they can control them and bring them back and burn them up. There are three that are already dead. Mm. Now, those ones failed, and as I understand it, they stay in orbit and they can't control those coming back down.
Why do we as a humanity need these satellites?
Sorry, no, the train just went past, sorry.
Why do we... Ah, sweet pun. Why do we need these satellites at all?
SpaceX wants to be able to provide broadband internet to places that can't get it at the moment.
Right on.
So it's going to be global across the world, so no matter where you are, you'll be able to hook into one of these satellites.
As long as you've got a device.
Your phone will do it, and you'll have the internet. So you could be up a mountain, you could be in the middle of Africa or the Amazon forest or wherever.
Yeah, I like the idea of people getting internet that wouldn't normally have it. They just need to have a device that does it as well, which kind of that's going to cost some money. So that's...
Yeah, I'm not sure how that part works.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
SpaceX haven't really discussed that as far as I'm aware.
Mm.
But I'm sure, knowing Elon Musk, he'll have a plan. But he's not alone, you know. The Russians are launching 32 satellites for the OneWeb satellite constellation. That's not Russian. I think that's Jeff Bezos. It's one of the other competitors. So they're starting their own constellation for the same reason, to provide internet connectivity. So SpaceX is first up there and ahead of the game, but they're going to be followed by others.
Right, right.
So the problem in astronomy, if you're looking at stars or recording something photographically, you need a long exposure. You're looking at something that's faint, so you can't just take a snapshot, a quick exposure. And so during the time the exposure is taking place, over minutes or even hours, satellites that are in the sunlight still will make a line across the image and spoil or upset what's going on and what they're trying to achieve there.
I guess on looking at stars, looking at our sun is the next.
The other end of the scale is looking at something that's extremely bright. The largest solar telescope is underway now. It's got one instrument that's working at this stage. This telescope's 4 meters across. Now, if you remember, or you know, friends who might have used a magnifying glass to chase ants around in the backyard.
Chase, or a little bit more than that.
You think how wide that lens was. Imagine a mirror that's 4 meters across, gathering sunlight.
Easy.
That's what this telescope. It does.
And it turns out the sun just looks like a bunch of vermiculite. There you go.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first images that have
gold!
Come down are just absolutely amazing. When
it looks like gold.
It looks like gold.
Yeah, well, each of those little cells is the size of Texas.
Holy crap.
Okay. You know, if you've got the state of Texas.
That's great to be able to actually look at the sun like that and go,
yeah,
okay, there's a few
but
ticks.
But that's, even though it's really small, as far as resolution goes, the sun is just so massive. It's 1.5 million kilometers across.
Mm.
You can put 109 Earths side by side across the face of the sun.
Not that you would. That'd be crazy.
Theoretically, you could. So when you're looking at the image that it's sent us at this stage, those small granules, those cells of hot material that's coming up like boiling water.
Is actually gold.
Each of those is the size of Texas.
And is actually gold, we found out by this picture. So that's good.
David,
yeah, that first image, just remember, is false colour.
Fuck, I knew that was going to be the case. Nothing in space is colour, is it? It's always they colour it in with some awesome rad colour that we've never seen before, damn it.
Well, if you look
Somebody
at what appears in scientific articles and so on,
mm.
It doesn't look pretty because all they're looking at is the scientific data that they can get out of it. For this image published, it's for the public.
I know, but I just, it's always a bit misleading for me. I'm not into it.
Now, hey, David, have they figured out why the sun's corona or outer layer is hotter than the surface?
Not yet. That's a very good question. I hope to be able to answer that down the track. I don't know exactly when.
Is this telescope going to be able to help them do that?
It will help, but that's in conjunction with a couple of other telescopes.
A temperature scope.
The Parker Space Probe, which is orbiting around the sun. Its closest approach will be 4 million kilometres, which sounds a lot, but it's really, really close, and it's especially protected against the sun's radiation and heat to achieve that. So that's feeding in data from close to the sun. And as it happens, on February the 9th, another telescope's going up, the Solar Orbiter spacecraft, which is a joint NASA and European Space Agency telescope, and that's going to go to the sun and go over the poles, so up above and below the sun. So you can look at the top and bottom of the sun. We can't see that from the Earth. We can only see the middle of the sun. And so those three together will hopefully be able to put together the data that means we can figure out what's going on with the heating of the corona.
Oh, very nice. Now, David, what's happening in the night sky at the moment? What can people look at aside from telescopes? I mean, satellites.
Well, after sunset, Venus is low in the west. It's very, very bright and pretty easily seen. It'll be there for a few more weeks. Mercury is a little lower, but it's really hard to see. So, you know, people might see it, they might not. Binoculars would help, but Venus is definitely worth a look. At sunrise in the east, Mars is reasonably high now in the east, and Jupiter much lower down. And Saturn is right near the horizon, but over the coming days and weeks, Saturn is definitely moving up above the horizon. So in a few weeks' time, you'll have Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn very easily seen in the morning sky.
Oh, very nice, very nice. And what's happening at Stardome?
Stardome, well, we're gearing up for the most romantic night of the year under the stars.
Ooh la la!
Valentine's Day, Friday the 14th of February. So for Valentine's Day, there are five shows, 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8, 9, and 10 p.m. Each of those shows, there are a drink and canapes before the show, and then the show itself in the Star Dome, under the dome there, highlights the romantic aspects of the night sky, so stories and the stars and so on. So each couple will also receive a romantic gift pack.
Oh, very nice.
So there'll be a bottle of what our marketing department called a bottle of deliciousness, mm-hmm, from Villa Maria. They'll get an Adopt-A-Star pack, that's $65 in value, and other romantic goodies as well.
What the hell is a bottle of deliciousness?
Well, it's from Villa Maria, so I'm just...
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
So the alcohol before the show is served only to those 18 and over, of course. Mm. People going to the shows need to arrive at least 15 minutes early. Get there good and early, because once the show starts, late entry isn't possible. You can't go into the show once it started in the planetarium. So I just give a little warning there, not just for arrival, but getting a park.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're in anything other than the first show, there'll always be the cars from the previous show there. So Hayden Ave, just the next street along from Stardome, is a good place to park if... there's nowhere else nearby.
Good place to probably have a little pash as well.
Sorry?
Good place to have a Valentine's Day moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a very popular show. There's, we've got five sessions, so there's plenty to choose from for times there. So, yeah, I'd get in early and get the two tickets booked to make sure you do have a seat.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, David Britton from the Stardome Planetarium and Observatory. Thank you very much.
Not quite.
Thank you for the
full time. We'll practice again in a couple of weeks.
See you then.
Cheers, bro.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM. Thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
And Spoonery.